You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we are joined in studio by our expert, Professor Alan Blackman. Good morning, Alan.
I always laugh when you say that word.
I guess good afternoon
it
now.
It is afternoon, yeah. Caster. Hi, Caster. Hi, Sophia.
Hello.
And, we are Dear Sciencing today, and we're going to talk about some music.
Yeah.
Which is always good, because I like my music. So, we're going to talk about the great Ludwig van, as he was referred to in what movie? Let's see how.
I couldn't tell you that.
I couldn't either.
General knowledge, not
Clockwork
so good
Orange. Clockwork Orange, the great Ludwig van. Right. So, Beethoven, of course, and he was around from 1770 to 1827. And look, if you wanted to do the worst possible thing to somebody who loves music, what would it be? Deafness. Okay, it's like, you know, a painter going blind or whatever. It's just the worst possible thing that could happen, the poor guy. And he began to go deaf in his 20s, which, you know, is ridiculous. He died at age of 56. His entire life he suffered from ill health. So he suffered from diarrhea, flatulence, abdominal cramps, just his whole life, basically. Right. And so in addition to this, he was going deaf. So in 1802, which is when he was 31 or 32, so he wrote a will. And in this will, he asked his doctor to, quote, describe my malady, as in sickness, unquote, after he died, because he basically wanted people to know what was wrong with him. So, you know, which, I mean, it's really, really, really sad, real, real tragedy. And, you know, possibly people know the story about his famous Ninth Symphony when he couldn't hear the applause of the audience because he was, you know, he was fully deaf at the time, you know. And, oh, dear, dear, dear.
Devastating
stuff. I mean, where's his biopic?
I mean,
you know, where's the big beta? We've done Mozart. We had Amadeus.
Big money there.
I would have thought so. So, but that's sort of beside the point, because a guy by the name of William Meredith, who is the director of the Beethoven Studies Institute at San Jose State University, sort of had a thought. So it's known that there are locks of hair of Beethoven's floating around the place. And imagine that. You're on your deathbed and everyone's busy cutting off your hair. So, you know,
these are just things we have now.
I know. Yeah. And so he was sort of thinking, well, you know, we've made such advances in sort of analysis, in genetic analysis, chemical analysis, et cetera, et cetera. Could we find anything out about Beethoven's malady from locks of his hair? And so he went looking around and he managed to get, amazingly, 5 locks of Beethoven's hair. And these were confirmed by DNA analysis that they did come from Beethoven.
Wow.
And so what he did was to send them off for chemical analysis just to see if there was anything in the hair that could explain his lifelong poor health. And so they analysed for lead and arsenic and mercury. And so 2 of the hairs showed, right, so these numbers probably won't mean much, 0.258 milligrams per gram of lead and 0.380 milligrams per gram of lead. So that is huge. That is massive. So right. Normal hair, normal, so-called normal anyway, will have less than 0.004 milligrams per gram. This is hundreds of times normal lead concentration, hundreds of times. And the arsenic concentration was 13 times what normal, quote unquote, would be, and mercury is 4 times over normal.
Jeez, wow. He's dealing with a lot of stuff.
So he's got all of these nasty, nasty, nasty heavy metals in his hair. And this was just published last week in the journal Clinical Chemistry. And so what to make of these numbers? Well, apparently the very high levels of lead could be a reason for his deafness because it can attack the central nervous system. And the question then becomes, well, how the hell do you get these ridiculously high levels of lead? It was known that Beethoven liked his wine. So apparently he would drink about a bottle a day.
Oh,
and okay. He liked his wine.
And apparently even more as he got older and older and older. Now, unfortunately, he probably liked his cheap wine because what they would do to make cheap wine cheap wine palatable would be that they would put a thing called sugar of lead or lead acetate in it, because that tastes sweet. And this is the same sort of thing that the Romans did as well, and they sort of kind of declined and fell. And so they're thinking that that might be the reason why he had so much lead, because he drank so much wine. The wine in those days was also, they were stored in kettles which had lead solder as well. So that's where lead would come from. And also apparently the corks in the bottles were soaked in a lead solution as well.
So he's getting it everywhere.
So he is absolutely getting it everywhere. Jeez. And apparently, the story goes, his last recorded words, he was given 12 bottles of wine by his publisher, and he realised that he'd never get to drink them, and his last words, recorded words, were pity, pity, too late.
Right. So he was thinking about drinking to the end.
Thinking about drinking. About there we go.
Just a big drinker.
So, you know, this, it is truly incredible what we can do these days. Just with, you know, with five hairs, you know, we can figure this out. And it just adds to the tragedy, really. It really does. Mm. You know, 56 is far too young to go. Being deaf, you know. Oh,
yeah.
So, you know, Hollywood, where's the biopic, you know?
Be sure to show him drinking the whole time as well. Just for accuracy. Yeah. All right, and then what have we got here about the first ever vaccine?
Well, today, the 14th of May, I believe. Isn't it 14th of May today?
Yeah, that is the day.
It is. So this is the anniversary of the first recorded vaccination.
Not quite first.
Okay. So, and everybody knows the name of the guy that did this. This was Edward Jenner. And but nobody really knows the name of the subject, let's say, of the vaccination. And it just goes to show that they didn't need ethical approval in those days, because the subject of the vaccination was an 8-year-old boy. And his name was James Phipps. And he was chosen by Jenner to be the patient for this. Now, Jenner's theory was he'd watched the milkmaids of the time would get this mild form, essentially, of smallpox. It was called cowpox, okay? And they got this from the cows that they were milking. But what he observed is that they never went on and got smallpox. So they'd get this mild dose of this thing called cowpox, but never go on to develop smallpox. They seem to be immune from it after having got cowpox. So he was thinking, okay, let's try this. So he took some fluid from cowpox vesicles on the hand of one Sarah Nelms, okay, another person whose name should be known, took that, made a couple of cuts in poor old James Phipps's arm and put it in there, and then monitored his health. And so he was okay, and then on sort of day 9 or something, he had a headache, a bit of loss of appetite and everything, and then day 10, he was fine, he was okay.
Classic vaccine symptoms.
And then the worst part, okay, 6 weeks later, he was purposely infected with smallpox. You know, this is where you wouldn't pass the ethical approval these days. So 6 weeks later, they did this to him, and he was inoculated with smallpox, and again, he didn't get smallpox. Just to make sure, he did it 20 times more.
20 times?
20 times more. Okay. Yeah, it's laughable in these days, but, you know, by crikey. And no harm was done, obviously. And so this guy, James Phipps, deserves to go down in history as being, you know, the unwilling participant of the first vaccination. Well, again, the first recorded vaccination, because apparently it had been done previously by someone in Germany and somebody else in England, but the details were not recorded. Yeah. So Jenner was essentially a sort of a physician, and so he made extensive notes and everything of what was done, notes and drawings and stuff like that. And so this is what we have to confirm that this is what he did. Now, James Phipps, fortunately, sort of didn't sort of fade from history, I guess, but in a very nice gesture, I guess, Jenner gave Phipps and his wife and his family free board, essentially, in one of Jenner's cottages for the rest of his life.
Compensation for 20 smallpox.
So, you know, it just goes to show you, I mean, you know, he must have been damn sure. He must have been really, really sure, because I doubt that anybody would go and willingly put an 8-year-old boy's life in danger. But then again, you just, you know, you can't be absolutely sure.
By test 18, surely.
Oh, let's just do another couple. Yeah, what the heck?
What's the harm? So,
So there you go. That's why the 14th of May is very famous in scientific history, and rightfully so as well. Mm. Absolutely.
And then here we've got brain mapping by researchers. What's that about?
Yeah, this is just nuts, really. There's so much we don't know. There's so much we know, but there's so much we don't know, and it always gets to the point where the more you know, the less you know, if that makes sense.
For real.
So the brain, how the heck does the brain work? Where do you even begin with the brain? So obviously, you know, people have made amazing strides about what's going on in the brain, but there's still, you know, we just have barely scratched the surface, almost literally, okay? So what Google scientists have done now is that they've managed to get a map of 1 cubic millimeter of a brain, okay? Now, 1 cubic millimeter is not a lot. Okay,
if you can
sort of visualize that, a millimeter by a millimeter by a millimeter. Mm. And that's about a millionth of a whole brain, roughly, there or thereabouts. So it's not much. Now, this mapping this 1 millionth of the whole brain, this 1 cubic millimeter, takes 1.4 petabytes of data. So just to remember, we've got megabytes, and then 1,000 megabytes is a gigabyte, and then 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte, and then 1,000 terabytes is a petabyte. It's 10 to the power of 15 bytes, okay? And that is just in 1 cubic millimeter, okay? And in this 1 cubic millimeter, we've got 57,000 cells, we've got 150 million synapses, okay, which is the parts of the brain that allow the passage of the signals between the nerve cells, okay? So they're all important things. Where'd they get the brain from? Well, there's a 45-year-old woman who was undergoing treatment for epilepsy, so she was having brain surgery for epilepsy, so they took this 1 cubic millimeter of her brain. And what they then did with this 1 cubic millimeter, they cut it into 5,000 slices. Okay, you can imagine cutting a millimeter into 5,000 slices. And each of those slices is 34 nanometers thick, 34 times 10 to the minus 9 meters thick. Okay. And what they then did, each of these slices they imaged with an electron microscope. And then they took all of these images and let AI do its thing and recombine all the images so that you got essentially this image of this 1 cubic millimeter of brain. And, you know, incredible that they can do this. The only problem is to get good images, from the electron microscope, what you need to do is you need to soak these slices in preservatives, and you've got to use some heavy metals to make things more visible, to make the cells more visible and stuff like that. So you're incorporating these foreign bodies in there, so how much they change the structure is anybody's guess, but, you know, whatever, it's a remarkable achievement, and it's going to be the subject of study for years and years and years to come, just this 1 tiny cubic millimeter of brain. So, you know, watch the space. This is going to be giving results, as I say, you know, for the foreseeable future. So amazing stuff. Absolutely incredible. Stuff. Yep.
And then we've just got a little bit here.
Yes, indeed. And so we all know that we are sponsored by MOTAT here at Dear Science, and by crikey, we thank them for that. Absolutely.
Thank you, MOTAT. Yeah.
And so just a wee word about MOTAT. They have got a new science and technology centre, and this is called Te Puawangana, and it opens on May the 25th, okay? And the centre has 3 different discovery spaces to explore. It adds more interaction, there's more chances to learn, and way more fun for your MOTAT visit. So if you want to know anything more about this that's happening, remember, again, on May the 25th, you can go to motat.nz and it will tell you all. So please support our sponsors. They're doing a fantastic job in publicising science. And, you know, in my book, there's not a heck of a lot better things than that. So go MOTAT, and we'll see you there, hopefully.
Yeah, once again, thanks, Alan. Thank you, MOTAT, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the beat.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.